Okay. And these next levels are first long-range interaction with promoters. That is an interesting subject. The second is definition of chromatin domains and insulators. And finally, what are the mediators of this interaction? Okay, and co-regulators. So this is the story for today. And actually, we start with the methods that we employ to see this kind of long-range interaction. Okay, so this is the first subject. You have seen already this slide. This is depicts you the first technical story that we realized to make long-range interaction methods. That is called, as you remember, 3C. That makes chromosome conformation culture. So the story is that whenever you have two regions of the chromatin that are far away from each other and they interact for any reason, okay, they will be probably to be cross-linked if you make a formaldehyde. Okay, so the formaldehyde, I remember you that cross-links proteins to DNA and proteins between themselves. So you have a fixed complex here, and then these two regions may be far also in two different chromosomes, no matter, because of course they present with a certain frequency restriction enzyme sites, okay, like this equal R1 site. So after making these cross links, you can digest with this enzyme. As you remember, 6 base cutters occur with a frequency of 1 every 4,000 bases, so it's quite easy to find them. Okay, no problem. Right. So what you do is to cut this story, okay, and then to make a ligation. So you just add ATP and DNA ligase, and make a very diluted reaction in order not to avoid intermolecular ligations and to favor intramolecular ligation. So the ends of the DNA that you just cut will ligate together, okay? So at this point, you just need to get rid of the proteins here, so you reverse cross-link, deproteinize, and so you get a piece of DNA that actually comes from probably very distant region to each other. Okay, they are linked. They are linked together now. So if you design a primer on the left, a primer to the right, you can make a PCR over there. And if you have an amplicon going up, means that you have got this kind of long-range interaction assay. Okay, is this clear to you? Important because we go many methods now, so they are based on this story. Okay, so this is very good. It was developed in the beginning of 2000 or less, and was very good for making single loci interaction because you just assay with PCR, so you make one-to-one assays. Okay. But the problem is that, as you know, now today we want to go to genome-wide stories, so we want to characterize all the interaction that is in the nucleus, the genome. So we need to scale it up in some way, and there are several stories, because you go with exactly with the same start point. This is just colored story, but it's exactly as the one that you saw before. Okay, so this small something is the restriction enzyme site. Okay, so you just have a complex in between promoter and enhancer or something. So you just restrict, so cut and cut and cut, and then ligate it. Okay, so the story to go to a genome-wide approach is to try to make all these sequences available and to go to NGS. Okay, so instead of PCR, only a single locus, just to take this story in a genome-wide mode. Okay, this probably will makes will make a lot of interaction, because as you can imagine, if you consider a nucleus with all the DNA and chromatin that is there, there are a lot of touches, lot of contacts and so on. But you can isolate also a subpopulation of these complexes if you use an antibody against one of the proteins. So you for example, you can be interested in seeing all the looping contacts in which is involved a specific transcription factor. Yesterday we talked about estrogen receptor, for example. You can take an antibody against estrogen receptor that is this green one. So you isolate only the looping contact in which estrogen receptor is involved. Okay, so it's, you reduce the complexity, let's say. Okay, so there are these variations, and actually there are many, many methods that have been developed that are called 3C, 4C, 5C, and high C. It's a very fantasy on the story. They have a reason. I don't remember exactly the reason of all these names, but anyway, this is, of course, it means high, in the sense high C and so on. And then there are methods that are based on this antibody purification of complexes. This chip loop and Chia PET method actually rely on the purification of some of the complex with an antibody. But let's just look at one or two of those, just to understand how they work. Not all of them, otherwise we make a course on technical methods. And so just make a, for example, the 5C, that is this one, okay, that has been extensively used by ENCODE project, for example. So what they do is a simple story. And the name 5C derives from this name, chromosome conformation capture carbon copy. Why carbon copy? Because they developed the method in which practically they synthesized oligonucleotides, this gray one here and black one here, that are the sequences that a number of possible interaction in a chromosome, right? So you take a chromosome, you consider enhancers and promoters, and you make small primers for each region, okay? And attach it to these probes, they say, there is a adapter, so a sequence. This is called T7 because it's the T7 promoter bacteria, viral. And this is T3 promoter. Just sequences that are not in the human genome. Okay, so different sequences. Okay? So these are, let's say, probes for enhancers and promoters, okay, a library, extended with a common sequence. Right? So the concept is that if you have realized the ligation, so go back to the general scheme. You have there, you ligate, okay? So you have enhancer, promoter linked together, okay? And this is exactly what you see here. So H stays for restriction enzyme site, okay? So this enhancer, this is the promoter, okay? So at this point, if you mix this complex of interaction with a mix of primers, some of them will go to complement the region of attachment, okay? This is precise because it's based on restriction enzyme site, okay? So you exactly pair the link, the probes, exactly in the point of conjunctions, okay, of linking. So at this point, these two fragments can be ligated together. So if you add a DNA ligase, the two primers, this and this, will be ligated, okay, because they are proximal. So it's easy reaction, okay? ATP and DNA ligase. So you get a couple of carbon copies. This is the reason. This is a carbon copy of the joint, okay? At this point, you just take the two primers that you have, T3 and T7, amplify with PCR, everything, amplify, okay? And then you either microarray or sequencing, depending on the
eras, before 206 were microarrays, and afterwards NGS, of course.
So you understand well that any probe that was not put together in the site is not amplified. So this is a very specific method and has been used extensively in ENCODE Phantom projects and other projects. Okay. Then what is IC? The other one that is very, very current. I mean, people today use prevalently IC. IC is actually all versus all, in the sense that in 5C you determine the sequence that you want to interrogate, okay? While in IC you take all, okay? And this method, again, is a modification of the 3C. So we start with the common ligation that you saw before, okay? Enhancer promoter, okay? But the trick, I mean, the difference in between the other methods is that when you ligate, you remember that the restriction enzyme cuts are sticky. Okay? So what they do is to digest one of the two in order to have a little single strand. Okay? And then they fill this single strand with a biotinylated nucleotide. So in all the conjunction sites here, the site there, there is a biotin something in between. Okay, so I say that again. In all the ligation points, you get a biotinylated nucleotide inside. Okay? This is just made because you have sticking ends, okay? You digest one of the two and ligate in the presence of a biotinylated nucleotide. Okay? So you have this situation now, and you can actually purify these fragments. Okay? But you remember that fragments, I told you, whenever you digest with an restriction enzyme, they are long fragments, so that's something like 4K. Okay? So you try to reduce the size of those. Okay? And this can be accomplished by sharing the DNA, sonicated or sharing through a needle or whatever else. It just will fragment this story. Some in some variation of the method, people digest with a four base cutter that is much more frequent, so you can digest here and there. Okay, so you have smaller fragment representing the interactions. Okay. At this point, you purify using streptavidin. Okay, so you purify the fragments, so everything goes away. You just recover this library of junctions. Okay, at this point, you make adapters and PCR and sequencing. Okay, so this is the method. This is very used today to make this kind of reaction. The problem is that, as I told you before, the interaction in a nucleus are so many that it's a huge library, actually. So many of the interactions that you see probably are not specific, so people today are working in order to, let's say, to improve the method to reduce the number of interactions. Okay, so this is the method, all versus all, and that, as I told you, there is modification to reduce the library to interaction that involve a specific protein, okay? So the commonest one is this Chia PET that is based on the purification. So you have exactly the same story. So you have proteins together with fragments of DNA that join together, okay? And you make a chromatin immunoprecipitation using an anti-something, for example, in this case, this yellow protein here, okay? So you purify out of the mix only those which contain the yellow protein, okay? At this point, you add to the extremities of this DNA, you add adapters, okay? So these small squares that you see here, they are adapters, okay, at the end, okay? And then you ligate. So you make a DNA ligase reaction, so you can join these ends over there, okay? All of them, so you can get, for example, this green part of DNA with a red part of DNA, but you can also religate the same DNA, of course. And at this point, you cut again with another restriction enzyme. So you take a frequent cutter, like a four-base restriction enzyme site, okay? So you cut there, and you get this kind of fragments. These fragments, actually, if you think about, they are two small sequences that come from different parts of the genome, okay? At this point, you make again adapters, and you go to sequence, okay? So you, this is the term pair, PA stands for paired end, because you sequence the two ends that are paired by the technology. Okay, so these are methods that have been used to characterize all these kind of stories, and the first paper, for example, that showed this kind of interaction is the paper from ENCODE, one of the 30 papers that I told you on the ENCODE in 2012, and as you can see, they characterized it all, they applied exactly the 5C, so the one that you design probes with extensions. And they used only 1% of the genome because to reduce the complexity of the interactions. And they generated maps from these cells here that you see, these lines. And then the results, of course, were integrated with the data from ENCODE consortium. In each cell line, they discovered something like more than 1,000 long-range interactions between promoters and distal sites that included elements resembling enhancers, promoters, and CTCF bound sites. Please note the CTCF bound site, we will talk about it several times today. So let's see the results. So the story is that they took, in this 1% of the genome, they took all anchoring primers, so one of the oligo was common to one site, for example a TSS. Okay, so they designed one single probe on TSS. Okay, then they explored all the genome on the left, on the right, and found possible other sites, possible other interacting sites. They found something that was resembling an intronic enhancer, for example. Okay, they made a probe. Another. Maybe something like resembling an answer, another problem. Then in the intergenic space, there were several similar answers in the other probes and so on. And finally, another promoter here, another possible fragment. Well, okay. So they made all the couples for all the promoters that were in the this region of the story. And so they started to make this 5C ligation-mediated analysis. And the results were a little surprising because they were actually a little, not really completely like what expected. I mean, we expected, for example, that enhancers are everywhere as compared to the TSS or the gene that is regulated. I said several times, they can be downstream, upstream, tincturons, whatever, okay? And then also, we usually reason that if you have a promoter here, you probably have an enhancer not close, but in the surrounding, okay? So you reason that usually the interaction is as close as possible. Okay, this was not really the story. They observed, first of all, that the long-range interaction have marked asymmetry, in the sense that it's not the same to be upstream or downstream. You will see the figure in a minute. The first story. The second story is that only 7% of looping interaction are with the nearest gene. So the story of proximity doesn't work. Only 7% actually concern the closest site, okay? And the other story that we were discussing, and that you will see in a moment, that there was the idea that every time you see the CTCF protein binding to an insulator, you have a definition of a domain, and it will stop interaction. Okay. And this was not verified. I mean, very often you have interaction over bound CTCF, but we discussed it. Okay. Okay, so this is the story of asymmetry. So if you take all the TSS that they examined, as you can see, this is the, okay, they examined enhancer classes, promoter classes, CTCF binding site, and other unclassified site. Okay. So if you take this, for example, this is when you have a primer on the TSS and then look for interaction of whatever, as in the figure here, okay, TSS, any kind of interaction around, okay, and as you can see, there is asymmetry, okay, so the frequency, this is a frequency of interaction, you see that is much more on the right than on the left. These are KBs. Don't be confused. Usually we take smaller windows for making this kind of consideration, like 1 KB, 2 KB. This is almost 1 million KB because this is long-range interaction, okay? So you see that on the left, the interaction fall down quite rapidly, while on the right side is a little bit more. So this is the first story. And this works for... essentially for the unclassified story, while if you see for the enhancer class, that is the most interesting, okay, the yellow one, you see that the frequency is completely on the other side. So the peak of interaction is something here, okay, and also with promoter and CTCF. Okay, so while you see, if you take any kind of unclassified fragment, you have a kind of interaction that is on the right. If you look at the enhancer promoter interaction, it's substantially on the left. And the maximum is something here that is around 100 KB. And this is the reason why today, bioinformatics guy, when they look for possible interaction, they usually stop at 100. It's not correct completely because we have interactions much far away. But actually, this is a convenient place to go to the most frequent interaction. So this concerns both the old TSS, and if you divide in between the expressed genes in those cells model, okay, or in non-expressed genes in those models, you see that more or less the same. Okay, so there is no change if they are expressed or not. Okay, so this is the story, and of course, the fact that there is a decreasing frequency with the distance, and you see that going to very long distance, you have a very low frequency of interaction, also means that you probably have a physical limitation to this kind of interactions, okay? So you don't map anything that is farther than 1 million, 2 million, so it makes that there is some barrier, a physical barrier to interact. Actually, if you think about the organization of a chromosome in a territory, there is no reason for us in our mind to limit interaction, because think about spaghetti. I mean, if you, in addition to spaghetti, one end of a spaghetti can interact with the other end. There is no reason why it doesn't, okay? So the fact that you have a sharp decrease in 1 million KB means that you have kind of physical limitation for interactions, okay? So this is the first conclusion. The second conclusion is that mapping a number of insulator binding proteins like CTCF has shown indeed that these chromosomes, sorry for the H, are organized in domains. So when you look at the physical region for this limitation, you see that actually there are many insulators. Okay, so these insulators actually limit stuff. So the other story that you see is that within a domain, so if you measure the interaction within a CTCF to CTCF domain, you have high frequency of interaction. While if you look at interaction between this domain and another one, the left is very, very low. So this probably is the reason for this physical limitation. Okay. And this is coherent with what we saw about domains when you look at the chromatin status. You remember that we concluded that there is spreading of modification. You remember that within domains. Okay, so you probably our genome is organized in parts. And these parts are either heterochromatic or euchromatic, and interaction between is limited in some way. Okay, this is it. Okay, we will see this story more, and how you represent. This is important because you see this kind of maps in papers, so you have to become expert to interpret what it is. This is taken from actually your exercise in the afternoon. You studied DSCAM, right? This is the part of the DSCAM gene, and as you can see here, there are several traces of different chromatin features. I know that you cannot read, but this is a DNA sequencing. That means that you have accessible site there. This is GROSIC. Do you remember what is GROSIC? No, I didn't explain you. It's a nascent RNA transcription. Yesterday we talked about eRNA. You remember? Okay. And this is determined by GROSIC. So you see that there is transcription here. Actually, it's the same place in which you have DNA's peaks. You see? Here you have a big enhancer probably because you have many reads. Okay. Also, you have this. Another. This is RNA polymerase 2 chip seq. So it localizes the RNA polymerase, and again, in the same region, okay. And this is exactly the same region. Then these are two chia pet in long interaction, okay, as you saw before. This one was made with an anti-estrogen receptor alpha, and this is made with anti-CTCF, okay. And you see that what we saw is interaction of this site with this site. This site with this site and with this site. And this side with this site. Okay, so if you look, they are exactly the places which you have significant modifications. Okay, so they are enhancers. Alright? And probably the most potent enhancer is this one. Okay. That's two interactions, this one and this one. The thickness of the line represents the frequency of interaction that you have seen. So if you have a very light line, means that few interactions. Okay, if you have a dark line, means strong interaction. And this is a good way to see, because you can map this is a part of the browser, okay, so you can see the story. The problem is that sometimes people like to make circles. There are a few scientists that like to make circles instead of having linear story. So if you convert this graph in this, you get this. Okay? You just taking this one and then making it like this, and you get this story. Okay, so you have the traces. This is a H3K27H, you see? Okay, this is the trace with the peaks. Can you see? This is the map of genes. You can see the genes there. Okay, good. And here is the interactions. So these lines in between tells you the interaction that has been seen in between the two parts of the gene. Okay, so don't be scared when you see this kind of circle. You can interpret. So not difficult. Okay? Also, you see that there is a region, just to note, then we talk about it later on. Just you know that there are many interactions in this region. You can see many, either inside or with different parts of the genome. And this is called, you see the signal of H3K27AC is very high all through this region, this blue histogram here. And this is called a super enhancer. I mean, it's kind of having many enhancers all together. Okay, so it makes a high signal, high level of interaction. Just take in your mind, because we talked several times about it. Okay, so another way, the third way, then I stop, to represent this kind of interaction is to make a heat map. Heat map means, as you remember, that you get a color code. So you have here, I go there, enlargement, so you see better. This is a color code, so the frequency of interaction, I mean the frequency in which you see reads of the interaction, okay, in your NGS library, okay, is colored in false color. So very high interaction when you have red, dark red, very low interaction when you go to white or red, okay? And then you depict a region of the chromosome. For example, you have this chromosome 6. These are coordinates in the genome. Please note that we are in millions. Okay, this is 50 millions, 51 millions, 52 millions. So we are close to the size that we saw before in the figure. Okay, and then you make a map like this one. That means that if you measure, for example, interaction between this part and this part, you get this dot here. You measure the interaction between this part and this part, and you get this dot here. Okay? So it's just projected in a triangle way. And each of the dots here have to be mapped in this way. Okay, the interaction between this point, this interaction between this and this is this square here. Okay? Have you understood the story? Good. So this is the other way people try to represent these kind of interactions. Okay? And whenever you see a figure like this, okay, a figure like most interaction in a triangle like this, or this, or this, means that you actually don't see any interaction, for example, between any region of this fragment with any region of the following fragment. Okay, this is white, so no interaction in between this part and the following part. Okay, otherwise you will have a red dot somewhere. So this is the definition of TEDS. Okay. Whenever you don't see any interaction in two parts, you define this part as TED, so topologically associating domains. Okay. And so you expect to have a kind of insulator or a physical barrier, of course, in this region that limits interaction between the two domains. Okay, so this is the story, more or less, and this is exactly what you see in your first paper, you remember, Levine paper, at a certain point in your review, actually presents the interaction, the OXD cluster with two kind of enhancers. One is in the right side, and the other one is in the left side, and if people map the interaction of these guys, okay, you can have these two domains that are either one or the other one, in the sense that in certain cells you have complete heterochromatization of this guy here, so you have only interaction on the right. In other cells you have completely heterochromatization of this enhancer, so you have only interaction on the left side. So this OXD cluster can either be present in one domain or in the other one, depending on the stage of development tissues. Okay. Good. Then let's look again at one more example just to make the point on this story. Of course, you can also compare two different samples. So you take, don't be scared again, take this representation and imagine to have another one in another tissue. Just put on the diagonal. Okay, so 1, 2, 3, okay, in the diagonal. Okay, so this is in long fibroblast, the region chromosome 1, this is the coordinate, okay, and this is the embryonic stem cells. Okay, so you see that you can compare directly the interaction of these domains with the two cells, and you see that there are clearly two parts, arrows will tell you, in which in ESC you have clear domains there. while in the lung fibroblast you don't. Okay, so this just tells you that these kind of domains are not fixed forever for any kind of cells, that they are regulated in different cells during development. Okay, same story here for a signal depending story. This is a heat shock. This is Drosophila melanogaster. This is a heat shock, and this is a normal temperature. So this is the effect of heat shock on a certain region. And again, you can see that clearly that some domain almost disappear, some other domains appear, and whatever. I mean, you have a reorganization of the domains, also following a signal, okay? Also following a strong environment situation like this one. Wow, good. Did I convince you? You are not convinced. Yeah, you are. I just asked you if you are convinced about this story. Yeah, okay. So, making a scheme, you can imagine that our genome regions are actually organized like this. So they have places in which the organization is interrupted. You can call them insulators or something, okay? And then you can find loops, okay? So interaction between promoter and answers in a region. So this is a domain. Okay. So this is, for example, is a predominantly active tissue-specific gene. So you have expressed genes there, euchromatic secretion, blah blah. And then you have a silent region here, and you have more compacted chromatin, no transcription. And then again, you have another region with active genes and blah blah. Okay. So the next story is, what are the spacers? So what are the regions in which you have this kind of physical separation? Okay. First of all, you see this kind of CTCF binding. Okay, there are actually two classes. If you make ChIP-seq of CTCF, you find essentially two classes of CTCF. One is clearly in the region of insulators, so in the region that space domains between them. Okay, and the second class is close to the interactions. As you can see there. Okay, so close to the interaction between an answer and promoter. So this is the story. And other story is that whenever you look for the kind of genes that are in the spacers, you find usually housekeepers genes. Do you know what are housekeepers? Housekeepers are genes that are expressed always in all the cell types. Okay, like ribosomal RNA, of course, just an example, but many others. Okay. So they are always expressed. So there is a theory that say, okay, whenever you have always expressed a gene, this makes the region active always, and no other interaction is possible. And this will stop physical interaction with other regions. Kind of theory, okay? Good, so this is the story, and so these tasks are defined by interaction, and are bordered by highly transcribed regions, okay? This large group of chromatin are due to specific proteins that bind DNA, specific sequences, and interact reciprocally, okay? There are defined architectural proteins, and the sequence of DNA recognized is called APBS, that means architectural protein binding sites. And the most studied of all is CTCF, as you know. But actually, there are many others, okay? Just less studied. As usual, we know everything about something that is popular, and less about other proteins. But anyway, it's okay. And the interesting story is cohesin, because CTCF interacts with cohesin. Do you know cohesins? You know. You don't know, but you know. Cohesins are the proteins that make chromatin together during mitosis. Yeah. meiosis. Okay, you remember that? They are circle protein. They are component in which they close actually the two DNAs in between. Okay. And this is very interesting that the coenzyme interacts with the CTCF, because if we imagine that CTCF makes the loop, okay, CTCF is here, okay, and makes the loops of chromatin. Of course, if coenzyme interacts with CTCF, you can imagine a model in which actually coenzyme keeps the two strands of DNA together. Okay? Okay, there are many, many papers, especially from physical, you know, modeling. I mean, our scientists from the physical part, not from the biological part, they studied the modeling of this and proposed models. But afterwards, a biologist tried to confirm with biological experiments. So one extremely interesting model that is very modern today is that describes how this kind of big loops can be formed, okay? And the model is this one. Coenzyme is a ring. So the protein is coenzyme, they make a ring like this, okay? And this ring can be occupied by DNA. Occasional loops in the DNA can enter the coenzyme ring, okay? And then this DNA can slide inside. Imagine to have a ring and to put a string in between the ring and then pull. Okay, the ring, the loop will enlarge. But since coenzyme interacts protein-protein with CTCF, when this is CTCF bound to insulators here and here, when they pull the DNA, at a certain point, the coenzyme will arrive to the ring, and this stops. Okay, so you have defined a loop between two CTCF binding sites. Quite easy to imagine. A little difficult, more difficult to prove, of course, in biology. What the people did was to make experiment in which they knock it down, either CTCF, okay, or other proteins that are this WAPL and this PDS5BA that are actually inhibitors of coenzyme loading. So they were proteins characterized during mitosis and meiosis in cells, and people knew that they were inhibiting the loading of coenzyme on the DNA. Okay. So what they saw is that whenever you so no cohesion, no formation of loops. If you eliminate CTCF of the cells, what happens is that the loops are much larger. So you get enormous loop, very long, extremely low long range interaction. Okay, so you eliminate the stopping in some sense. Okay. And when you eliminate these two inhibitors, okay, so you inhibit the loading of coenzyme, okay, you still see coenzyme. So they are not really inhibitor of coenzyme loading. What happens is that they avoid interaction between the CTCF and coenzyme. So that you get very large loop because there is no longer interaction between CTCF and coenzyme. So probably the model works. It's interesting. It was proposed. The funny story is that this model was proposed by a physicist something like 50 years ago. So when we knew anything about the genome and the interaction, but still, when thinking about how the genome could be organized in cells, this physicist imagined that there was something like rings. We even didn't know the existence of coenzyme, and that this model could accomplish for microscopic electronic images, because at that time we had some microscopic showing this kind of, you know, looping or something in the genome. He was trying to imagine. And actually, the model worked, at least, maybe. Anyway, good for the moment. So this coenzyme will stabilize long-range interaction, and the interesting thing is that the tracing has made many more roles, not only to make CTCF to CTCF, but also to stabilize enantiomer promoter interaction. So when this kind of cohesin to CTCF interaction was characterized, people started to see the effect of knocking down cohesin on the enantiomer promoter interaction. They found that actually it has a role in stabilizing this connection. Okay. Good. So okay, CTCF is I probably missed the slide, or probably was in another lesson. Did I tell you that CTCF is a methylation sensitive binding factors? Probably talking about imprinting, if I remember well. There was a model at the IGF-2 imprinting region in which there was an enhancer and an insulator. And the insulator was binding CTCF depending on methylation or not of DNA. You don't remember, I do. Anyway, I tell you it again. This CTCF has a binding site that is CCCTC, so this is the sequence which is recognized. But if the first C is methylated, it's close to a G, and it's methylated, as usual, okay, it doesn't bind anymore. Okay, and so it is a methylation sensitive transcription factor, whatever. So one important question is that if this methylation of sites, okay, of CTCF binding site can regulate that formation. Because of course if you remove CTCF from the insulators, you can probably have more extended stories. I just tell you the question, there is no results to show to you, because there are some papers in the last 2 years about this problem, that is an interesting problem. Because methylation has something to do with development, we see that the TADS organization is dependent on methylation, so maybe. So if you find the paper for your reports, this is a good subject to discuss. Okay. Okay. Final story. Yeah, I told you that the domains are very, very well defined, usually, because whenever you see for interaction, you see this triangle shaped interaction maps, but you may have sometimes interaction in between the tets. Okay, so this is depending on the strength of the borders. There are very strong borders and weaker borders. Okay, so if you make a map of all the genome, you can find occasionally you can find borders in which there are, let's say, leaky. So they sometimes there is interaction in between the two domains. Okay, not many, but as you can see, some of them. Then if you have a strong border, of course, you cannot see, you see much less interaction between the two domains. Okay. And this is the very last story I forgot before, but anyway, that's okay. So, just to stop for the first part, you can discover the reason why I put this image in the Moodle site. You never seen this image on Moodle site? I took it from here. Because a few years ago there was this interesting article on Nature saying inching toward the 3D genome. That actually was a review reporting all these kind of results. And so people are trying to make it imagination how all this interaction and situation in the genome are realized in the nucleus. And this is a complicated story, especially because scientists use three approaches. One is physical modeling, that is this kind of theoretical physics that make models, mathematical models, or this kind of stuff. Okay. Second is that we take long-range interaction, that is our story. Our, in the sense, molecular biology, so you take 3C, IC, and whatever, and try to make bioinformatics after it, and so on. And the third method is to make co-fish. So taking a green probe from a region, a red probe from another region, making confocal images out of it, and see whether two regions that were predicted by molecular biologists to interact, you can see co-localization of the two signals, okay, in the confocal. Unfortunately, it's very rare. So unfortunately, what happens today is that there is real difficulty in having the two approaches working together in the same way. So there are few regions that have been confirmed by the two technologies, and people actually, scientists, think about the reason of this. Of course, I mean, you have to think that preparation of the material for making the two approaches is completely different. To confocal microscopy, you have something, a living cell. You can also imagine in a living cell that anyway you have an ex vivo situation in which you just take the nucleus of the cell on the plate and then put, and you, what you have to do to make fish, you remember, you have to denaturate the DNA. I mean, to make a probe interacting with the DNA, you have to denature, so you have to heat it up. Okay? If you heat it up, probably change something. Okay? Maybe. On the other side, when we make this kind of IC or whatever else, we make a formaldehyde fixation. Never forget it. So you take cells and you put formaldehyde for 5 minutes or something. And so do you remember the times of permanence of transcription factors that we discussed on Monday? Do you remember when this kind of movie in which you see the transcription factor going in and out? They were something like 10 seconds or something. So you make 5 minutes fixing with formaldehyde. That is enormous. How many interactions will happen in that time? So the dynamic is frozen down in a period of 5 minutes, and it probably changes a lot of things. So just to make you thinking about two different technologies, two completely different treatment of ex-living materials, and then you have conclusions. Don't be surprised that the conclusions are different. Okay? Can we have a coffee? So I also sketched some slides here, but this is just telling you that the same story of TALS is also detected by inserting reporters. So people made the experiments inserting reporters in the mouse and seeing that depending on the location in which the reporter was sitting down, it was taking regulation from one TAD or from the other TAD. So we just keep it. It's not that important. So we talk now about the super enhancer. I told you before, these are regions in which there is a very high density of enhancers, like tracts of something like 2K, 3K. So it's a very long tract as compared to the normal enhancers. Normal enhancers are something like a few hundred bases, even smaller, okay? You remember the enantiosomes of IFN is very short, something like 50 bases or something. So these are long tracts in which you see typically a long occupation of H3K27 acetylated, okay? So detecting activation of a long tract of the olive. Actually, this is the modern way to call this kind of long enhancers, and it is typically of differentiation. So people say these super enhancers are linked to regulation of cell-specific genes. Okay, so they play a fundamental role in determining the cell fate during development. Actually, once upon a time, we called them LCR. That the terms are actually interchangeable. LCR stands for locus control region. that, as you can imagine, is more or less the same significance as an enhancer or super enhancer. Okay, and we have a. Okay, this is just the transcription of what I told you now. And there is one old example that is probably better to know, that is the locus encoding for the different form of globins. Sorry for the Italian. I haven't found the same image in English. Sorry. So this region contains beta globin genes, okay, in mouse or in human, okay, is more or less the same. And as you remember the story in human, we have different kind of beta globins depending on the stage of development. Okay, during early development we express epsilon globin, then in later stages we express gamma, and in the adult we express beta almost during early age. Delta also. So they are clearly derived from duplication of genes during evolution. Okay, they are very similar to each other, and they actually you can ask why we have different genes for embryonal status and adult status, because the oxygen tension in the embryo is lower than in adult. Adult has its own lungs, breath, oxygen like me. Okay. And on the contrary, the embryo takes the blood from the mother, so it's already filtered. The tension of oxygen is lower. Okay, so this version of globins have a higher affinity for oxygen. That's it. Okay. So this is control. The expression of one of the different genes in this locus is regulated by this LCR. This LCR today we will call it super enhancer, actually, because it's a long region of the genome. Okay, this is the paper where I took the story. In the mouse, it's more or less the same. They are only four genes. The story, I mean, it's the same. And this is the mouse locus, and you see that whenever you have these arrows, okay. Whenever you have these arrows on this part of the chromosome, you have DNA's hypersensitive sites. Do you remember what is DNA's hypersensitive sites? Sites that are accessible to DNAs, and usually in vivo they are occupied by transcription factors. So translating, you have enhancers there, okay? These are enhancers, and this is the what we call today super enhancer, because it's a region. You can look the dimension here. So this is 50 kilobases, so 0, 50, 50, and so this guy takes something like 30 kilobases, something, okay? So it's a big piece in which you have hyperacetylation of K27, okay? All these two, okay? So each of these arrows there is one gene, okay? This is beta max, this is beta H, and this is epsilon. So in the mouse, they are placed in the same way as humans. So this is the embryonal form, this is the fetus form, and this is the adult form, okay? So this locus is particularly complex because mixed with this globin genes, we have also olfactory receptor genes. Don't ask me why, I don't know. These are olfactory receptors, these are olfactory receptors, these are olfactory receptors. So it's a kind of mixed story, but anyway, it happens in the genome, so no problem. So this, we have another enhancer here. Okay, people, of course, they know that these genes are regulated by this enhancer because of mutation. If you mutate here, lose expression. If you mutate any one of those, you lose expression. Okay? So we know the story very well. So we can make these 3C experiments. Okay? You remember 3C? Don't have to describe again. 3C. Okay? Interaction. And this is the result. So what they took was to take, this was a pre-NGS era, okay, so no NGS, no sequencing, just one-to-one, okay, So CHIP experiments, sorry, 3C experiments, and then PCR. Do you remember that? I saw you a little perplexed. So what they did is to measure interaction between one fixed place. This is the map. You can see, you can recognize the map? Sorry. Can you recognize the map that I showed before? This is the map. This is the map. Okay? So this graph represents interaction between one fixed primer, for example, this black one, okay, on the beta minor in the mouse, and any region in gray. So another primer that is designed on this region, this region, this region, and blah, blah, okay? And these levels that you see is the level of interaction that they saw. They measured it by 3C, okay? So for example, you have interaction between this beta and this major promoters, a little bit, okay? Then interaction with this 5 and 4 enhancers there, sorry, 6 and 5 enhancers, here. Interaction with the 4 enhancers there, and blah, blah. You have very low interaction with the 3 and with 1 and 2. Okay. So what are the two lines? Because they measure it in two kind of tissue. In liver, where in the fetus, liver produce beta globin, okay? So it is expressing tissue, okay? Versus brain, that is clearly a non-expressing tissue. Okay? So you suppose not to have interaction between enhancer and promoter in brain, and do have interaction in liver, okay? So you measure them, and this is in brain, and this is in liver, okay? From the right part, you have same interaction, and this is probably just due to proximity, okay? Then another story, you measure interaction between this enhancer, fixed, and all the gray primers there, and again you see clear interaction between the second enhancer here and this other enhancer that is placed here. You see? A big T here. And with the promoter of the beta minor. Okay? So they measured all interactions. Okay? So to make this story short, what happens at the final, they could describe interaction of each of these enhancer, this DNA's hypersensitive sites there, okay, with the beta minor, that is the form most expressed in the stage of the embryo in which they measured the story. Okay, this is not adult, this is fetus, so it will express only the beta minor form, okay. So, making this kind of 3C study, they characterized interaction by all the enhancers, also the downstream one, with the beta minor promoter that is active at this stage. Okay? So you see that this is a kind of model in which many enhancers, say, so many transcription factors bound to different regions of the genome, they interact together to regulate one single promoter. Okay, this is a concept that has been reviewed in this Bomben Diamond review in 2015. There is the concept of transcriptional hub, in which you have many, many enhancers, okay, spread away that regulate the same gene. And also probably justifies the observation that we made that for each gene we have at least up to 10 enhancers around. Okay, so these enhancers are working together. Okay, this model has been verified at all the LCR that we know today, and they are called super enhancer. Okay, super enhancers are very important because they are involved in an extreme high number of disease in humans. So you will see in the second part of the course with Professor Kutrupi, with several examples of mutation or epigenetic dysfunctioning of enhancer that justify disease in different organs and tissues. Okay. Okay. Now, final chapter is the mechanism by which So we are falling down with the big chromatin, and then we are going down to the small molecules that actually determine this looping, okay? And taking from the Heinz review that you have as a textbook, we see as a final figure this one, in which you see that there is an enhancer with a typical chromatin modification and the factors bound to it. Again, the pol 2 that is transcribed in eRNA, as you remember. And here we have a promoter in which we have several other transcription factor bound. We have the polymerase 2 machine making messenger RNA, actually pre-messenger RNA, but doesn't matter. Okay? And you have, importantly, you have co-activators. Okay, so protease that we'll describe in a moment that binds to transcription factor and activate transcription. Okay? So the question is, what is this looping mechanism? What is the molecular entity that brings together enhancers and promoters? Okay? So of course we need transcription factor. Many experiments have shown that if you eliminate transcription factor bound to promoters or transcription factor bound to enhancer, you don't get interaction any longer. So the components, the primary components are those, of course. But then you have many other protein and complexes that can work together. So in between the most important, you have this complex that is called a mediator. Then maybe we have some RNA also in between, and cohesins, as we saw before. So let's try to discuss it. The mediator is a big protein, actually. It's a multi-subunit protein, we will see in detail in a minute, that is found always binding to promoter or to enhancer. Okay, so you make co-EP, so you make co-immunoprecipitation experiments using as a bait transcription factor, practically any transcription factor you can use as a bait. You co-immunoprecipitate this kind of big protein that is mediator. Okay? Mediator also, subunits of mediator were observed to interact with basal peak. You remember what is basal peak? It's the component of the basal promoter complex. Okay. But anyway, there is a need of proximal TFBS. So if you eliminate the transcription factor, you don't have this kind of interaction. Okay, so the story is again an answer, transcription factor bound, promoter with a base, the basic complex, this is what we call PIC, if you remember. And these are transcription factor in the proximal elements bound to coactivators. And then mediator is a big protein, large protein complex that actually mediates this kind of interaction. Okay, what are the coactivators and corepressors? So what is this? These are is a conceptual definition. There is no unity. It's not like transcription factor. When you say transcription factor, you say, okay, a DNA binding protein which regulates transcription. Coactivator actually is a kind of philosophical category in the sense whatever helps transcription factor to work is a coactivator. Okay. Since we have both coactivators and co-repressors, actually there are proteins that help transcription factor to repress instead of activate, we call them generally as co-regulators. It's a kind of definition. Okay? So coactivators and co-repressors are large protein complexes that exhibit several functions. The first one is interaction with transcription factor. So they can be co-immunoprecipitated with the transcription factor. Okay. They are usually, but not always, they are usually histone PTM writers or erasers. So they are usually enzymes that are competent for making a specific modification to chromatin. okay, you know very well. So, for example, histone acetyltransferases. When you look at a coactivator, of course, it will necessarily acetylate histone to permit transcription. Okay, so this is the first, let's say, the first model. And then you have other factors, like, for example, a large category of chromatin remodeling factors that are enzymes. Actually, they have chaperones, in the sense that they use ATP hydrolysis to get energy to remodel nucleosomes over DNA. That, in other words, in simple words, means to move the nucleosomes, okay, to slide nucleosome in another position. Okay. Of course, these are necessary, because if you add RNA polymerase, imagine to be an RNA polymerase. You try to transcribe a gene and you find another number of nucleosomes behind you. So it's a kind of difficulty, okay? So you need to bring with you coactivators that will remodel nucleosomes and permit to go through, okay? So coactivator and corepressor may be recruited directly by transcription factors, or they can interact with PIC, so with the pre-initiation complex, or with mediator subunits. Okay, we have several examples. I don't want to make a systematic analysis of all the coactivators and corepressors. The first prototype coactivator was ever that was discovered something like 40 years ago is CBP. CBP is quite important also for neurobiologists among you, because it's very important for several action in the nervous tissue. And this was characterized as a protein necessary to have response to cyclic AMP. Cyclic AMP, probably as you remember, has a cytoplasmatic activity through protein kinase A. Phosphorylates many enzymes. You remember glycogen phosphorylate or something like this. But also has a nuclear action. There is a factor that is called CREB that you will see in the model that is only active when it is phosphorylated. Okay? So only when the protein kinase, which is activated by cyclic AMP, phosphorylates CREB, okay, you will have activation of transcription. So people started to see whether this phosphorylation was a, for example, allowing CREB going to the nucleus, making translocation, like in the case of steroid receptors. And this is not the case, because they could determine that CREB always sits on the DNA. The problem is that when it is not phosphorylated, it cannot interact with the coactivators. Okay? So unphosphorylated CREB doesn't activate transcription just because it doesn't interact with coactivators. Okay? So phosphorylation of CREB permits CBP to attach to it. There is also crystals of this domain and this domain together, so you can see whatever you want. The literature is quite rich on this. And this interaction allows the factor to interact with basal component of the promoter. So in this case, you have transcription, all right? So this was the original definition 40 years ago of coactivator, a protein necessary for a transcription factor to activate transcription, okay? You can also siRNA, you can downregulate CBP, same, you don't have activation anymore, okay? And people studying this CBP, that is only one of the coactivators that we have in the nuclei, actually they realized that the CBP has an incredible number of sites interacting with an incredible number of transcription factors. In this map, you see that this is the protein map of CBP, you see here, several domains, is a big protein, 300 K Dalton, so it's an enormous protein. And has interaction with all these factors, nuclear hormone receptor, SV1, STAT, and this STAT2, HNF4, P, blah, 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 retinoic acid receptor, PC73, TBP, and blah blah. This another domain which interacts with all these factors there. YY1, you remember YY1, this one that anchors exist today. So many, another domain here with an incredible number of factors. So, making the story short, this is a general coactivator. Whatever is the factor bound to the enhancer or to the promoter, you will have CBP lending to it because that's interaction to it. Okay? And importantly, it has a head domain. Do you know what is head? It's histone acetyltransferase. Okay? So everything in the story fits. Any transcription factor bound, coactivator recruitment, acetylation to histones, and then remodeling of the premises. Oh, another important story is that it has an homologous in the human and mouse genome that is P300. They are in some way interchangeable. Okay, so you can have on an answer, you can find either CBP or P300. Okay, they are very similar proteins. Okay, so this slide doesn't mean anything. Just tells you how many different coactivators you can find to bind to a transcription factor. So this slide told you how many factors interact with a single coactivator. Okay, this slide tells you how many different coactivators can interact with a single transcription factor. So this is a kind of very many complexes. Don't be scared. It depends on the context. On one gene, you can find one coactivator. On another gene, you find another one. Blah, blah. Okay, so this is just the story. And this was something that was published by one of these. This Valentina Parisi was the former professor last year here. Was a former student of your Corso di Laurea. Now she has worked 10 years in United States at La Jolla with Michael Rosenfeld, and then she is in Boston, and last year was here as a visiting professor. I couldn't have her this year, I don't know why. So, no Parisi today, this year, for you. Sorry. Anyway, she was looking at the coactivators, and you see these nuclear receptors, like estrogen receptor or whatever else, they interact with this, that are the ATP-dependent chromatin remodeling enzymes, or with this histone arginine methyltransferases here, or with histone acetyltransferase in between CBP, of course, but also different heads like TIP60, PCAF, all different acetyl histones, okay? Or RNA and RNA processing molecules and mediator, okay? So all of them, they can interact with the same factor. So mediator, let's talk just a little bit with mediator. Mediator is a multi-component protein, and people characterized them in something like 20 years ago by making immunoprecipitation. So they take cells of tissue, nuclei, nuclear extract, and then immunoprecipitate using anti-transcription factor antibody, okay? And then making mass spectrometry of the complex here, so to characterize all the proteins coming down with the co-hip, and it's of course you have to know everything of this slide. I'm joking, just to show you that depending on the kind of transcription factor they use, it they characterize the different proteins and they call it them with different names. But when we realize that actually they are the same. Okay, so this is, for example, a DRIP mediator that is with vitamin D receptor. This is with the tidal receptor, and this is with another PC2 factor. So to make the story short, this mediator is composed of different subunits. Okay, different subunits that are being called with many different names. Fortunately, a few years ago, when the UniProt database tried to make an order in between all those, there is a common nomenclature for all these guys. So we have a common nomenclature that is MED something, okay? MED, the number is the molecular weight of the protein, okay? So we have now definition by MED something, Okay, so this is a real large protein. We can get electron microscopy images of it. It's so that large that you can see it, in a sense. And this is made like this. This is an image that has been reconstructed with this is RNA polymerase. Okay? And people knew that this is RNA polymerase because this is a gold label. Okay? And this is the CTD of the RNA polymerase here. Okay? And this is mediator. Mediator has a configuration like this. It's a trilobate protein that is composed by different proteins. So these are the proteins that are in this GAL11 module here. This is the second module here. And this is the SLB4 module here that is composed by this protein. So as you can see, it's a multi-component protein. Interesting thing, this image was modeled using computer-assisted modeling, of course. And this is the shape of mediator bound to RNA polymerase. And actually, the guys who made this kind of modeling were kind of joking because they tried to model it as a hand. You can see, you can imagine it. This is a kind of, it looks like a hand with an RNA polymerase in between the fingers. Okay, it's imaginative, it's not reality. If you turn it over, you can see like this. Okay, so this is the, and people call head, middle, and tail, these three lobes of the mediator. The interesting thing is, depending on the kind of factor you precipitate, so you make co-immunoprecipitation with different factors, it is not the same shape. This is, for example, a complex that was precipitated with this guy, ARC. This is CRISP, another precipitation, okay? And this is a VP16, that is another transcription factor. This is SREBP, another transcription factor. So you see that the shapes of these complexes are slightly different from each other, and this reflects the composition. You remember the first original slide. Depending on the kind of immunoprecipitating TF, you have a different composition. And this reflects the shape of the protein. It's quite interesting to see. Anyway, so take-home messages. Mediators is a large multisubunit complex showing both common and facultative, sorry for the L, subunits. Okay? Composition, shape, and molecular weight is dictated by the context where mediator operates. In other words, the TFs that are bound to enhancer and promoters involved in any specific interaction. So this mediator interacts with the transcription factors at the enhancers, but depending on the kind of factors that are bound there, it's probably the component is slightly different from each other. Okay? Good. So, we can imagine that we have promoters with all the factors bound to it, mediator, and then enhancer with all the factors bound to it. And there is the final interesting story today, is that people discovered that in this complex you also find non-coding RNA. And this is a real novel story, it is really interesting. And I want to show you the paper that originally described this story. Then it has been confirmed by many other authors. But this is the first. So this is a 2013 paper in Nature. As you can see, activating RNAs associated with mediator to enhance chromatin architecture and transcription. So there is a previous work, because they found, do you remember that when we talked about the genome, I told you that there are many long non-coding RNA encoding genes in the genome, okay? So these guys were looking at the at long non-coding RNAs and found that there is a subclass of RNAs, okay, that when you knock down them using siRNA or any other trick, so you downregulate, they abrogate the expression of the nearest gene. Tell you again. So you have a gene that encodes for a long non-coding RNA. You take a siRNA that will downregulate this RNA. Then you look for regulation of neighboring protein coding genes, and you found that there is one of these, the closest one, that is also downregulated. In other words, this RNA is essential to keep expression of the long non-coding genes alive. Okay? Good. So they try to look for this in a deeper model. And so they what they did is to take one of those long non-coding RNA gene that is called ncRNA-A7. It's one. Don't tell me where it comes from. I don't remember. From someplace in the genome. Okay. So they took one of these genes and they cloned this gene, okay, that is composed by two exons. They cloned it in a reporter vector. This is a common reporter vector that has a TK promoter, thymidine kinase promoter, this ubiquitary promoter, okay? And this is firefly luciferase, you remember that, this lightning protein, okay? And then they cloned it there, and then of course they made a genomic control, negative control, that they cloned the genomic insert with no known action on transcription, so negative control, okay? So you transfect these two constructs stably, so you integrate in cells. They use this human embryonal kidney cells that are very common in our laboratories, like 293, because they transfect very easily. You can transfect extremely easy, okay? And look for expression of the guy here, the firefly luciferase, okay? Then you measure. So no transfection, okay? You have this level of transcription normalized in between the two, okay? It's normalized. It's not that the transcription is the same in the two cells, but they normalize it to 100%. Now try to downregulate this guy, okay? So you transfect the cell with a siRNA against the RNA that comes up from this guy, okay? So you downregulate this RNA here, okay? And look at what happens to the red column. This is a siRNA of control, so no specific, of course the same. When you transfect the cells with a siRNA that downregulates this RNA here, okay, you have downregulation of luciferase in your reporter vector. Of course you have no downregulation in your control. Okay? Can you follow? Okay. You use another siRNA, another siRNA, again, just a different one. Always again this guy, just to be sure, and again you have the same kind of response. Okay, so downregulation of luciferase in this vector, no effect, of course, on the control. Okay, so in other words, with this system, they reproduced what happens in endogenous. Okay. Now let's see what component, because we know that for interaction of enhancers with the promoter, we need mediator. So they asked which component of this big complex of mediator could be also required for this kind of interaction. So they tried to downregulate a number of components. You see here, yeah? And to see the effects on the control, on the control, gray, and on the reporter gene, that is white, okay? So again, siRNA control, no effect. When you make siRNA against this A7 non-coding RNA, you have reduction, okay? And then all other proteins that you see here, this is the CDK9 component of mediator. This is a CABP-A that is a component of mediator also. This is P300, you remember, coactivator. This is one of the general transcription factors, blah, 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 all the same. Not the level, but the same in between control, one vector and the other vector, okay? But when you look at the difference, you see two components here, okay? So the siRNA against the RNA itself, okay? And MED12. So when they downregulated MED12 component, they had the same effect as downregulating the non-coding RNA, okay? So in other words, it seems that this is the most essential component to mediate the effect of siRNA, okay? Verify on the normal locus where this guy, siRNA7, stands normally, okay? So they took the region of the genome, is chromosome 20, okay? In chromosome 20, in this locus you have several genes. This is NAI1 that encodes for epithelial to mesenchymal transition regulating transcription factor. This UB2V1, which is a ubiquitin enzyme. This AURKA, that is a kinase involved in signaling the cytoplasm, and this CSTF, I don't remember what it is. Anyway, you have 6 megabases in between here, where there is interruption. So it's the kind of big locus. And this is the place in which usually sits this non-coding RNA gene, okay? So they made the same kind of experiment, but looking for endogenous regulation. Okay, so again, short interfering RNA against different components, okay, or SH, you know this SH, short hairpin, depending on the, sometimes you don't have enough effect with the siRNA, so you use SH or something. And looking for the difference in between the two the genes that are regulated or not. Okay, so these genes are regulated by this RNA. These are not regulated by RNA. And if you look for the effect of the component, you see that, for example, when you make siRNA of the long non-coding RNA, A7, you see that you lose completely the effect on what? On this gene, okay, of course. Looking for the effect of siRNA against non-coding RNA A7 on SNAI1, so on this guy here, you see there is a slight reduction here. More reduction when you siRNA MED1, even more effect when you siRNA MED12 that you have seen before, okay? No effect, for example, on this gene. So the UB2V1 is not affected by any of these siRNA, okay? You look at the AURKA gene here, the black one, you see again, effect, okay? So this is strange because in some sense it appears that a long non-coding RNA here makes an action is necessary to have an enhancer function on only some of the genes in the locus and not on the other. Okay, so CSTF, UB2V1 are not sensitive to it. So people, the authors demonstrated at this point that there is a direct binding between this ncRNA and MED, so the mediator component. Okay, so this is a protein-protein co-immunoprecipitation experiment in which you have clear interaction of this ncRNA7 with components of MED12 and MED1. Okay, clear interaction there. This negative control, no interaction. Okay, so to make the story short, actually they characterize also chromatin interaction, long-range interaction between this region containing the ncRNA7 and the promoters. Okay, so they took this region, they make several primers. All this region that you see with the asterisks are primers on the different regions of the genome. Okay, and they make 3C. You remember 3C? Okay, so interaction with by this guy to this guy here, or to this guy here, and so on. And this is the graph. So these are the different sites that are called S1, S2, S3, blah, 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 blah. And this is the interaction with the different places. Okay. So what they demonstrated here is that there is a direct interaction. What is happening to our project? This is tired. I am tired too. Okay, stop. So in other words, they could demonstrate that there is interaction of this guy here with the promoters that are regulated. Okay, so this peaks means that you have interaction between this site and the promoters. Yeah. Okay. Last slide. Conclusion: a new action of ncRNA was discovered. The ncRNA binds to mediator, and these RNA are involved in lipid interaction. So actually, they initial slides that I showed to you is demonstrated. We have occasional places in the genome in which we have ncRNA locus, which is it is transcribed in a non-coding RNA here. This non-coding RNA makes interaction with the mediator protein, okay? And this, in turn, stabilizes interaction with the promoter. Final question that I make to you. Is this non-coding RNA remembering something to you? An RNA that is transcribed from a bona fide enhancer? Yeah. It is exactly like ERNA that we talked on Monday. Actually, this is a kind of particular ERNA, because you remember that ERNA classically are transcribed for both sides. You remember? Bidirectional transcription, both sides of the enhancers. And on the contrary, these A and non-coding RNA apparently are monodirectional. So they are transcribed only in one sense. However, we don't know exactly what is the story, because if you make overall genome-wide characterization of eRNA, you find both transcription one side and by directional transcription. So we cannot decide. Anyway, in a number of cases, this can be one novel action of non-coding RNA in situ. I'm surprised by myself.